Welcome, action fans, and thanks for joining us for another edition of All 90s Action All the Time, as we continue this year's journey looking at the highlights and lowlights of action movies in 1994. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and on this edition, we are looking at the Mel Gibson Western Maverick. Saddling up alongside me to talk about this one, we've got a very special guest in the form of retro-made host and one more round, the Rocky Series podcast co-host, Katie Geilenkirchen. Thank you very much for joining me, Katie.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
So before we get into the stats of today's film and get into the plot of today's film, can you tell us a little bit about your podcast, particularly the Retro Maids, which is your own podcast, your solo outing?
Yeah, it's fairly new. I started it this year, and it's a little pop culture rewind from the 80s and the 90s. So I have themed seasons, and the first season is based around who I deem the ultimate everyman, Kurt Russell and Patrick Swayze. So I cover their films. And the little twist on it is that whenever the film came out, the first segment of the show kind of covers what was going on in the world of music and TV, et cetera, at that time, just to kind of get in the mood of, whatever month and year the movie came out. So that's Retromade. If you like that kind of thing, head on over. And then, as you mentioned, if you like Rocky, I also join Ryan and Kyle on One More Round, the Rocky Series podcast, which is also on the Last of the Action Heroes podcast network.
Yes, indeed. As this podcast is as well, which sometimes I forget to mention. I should mention it more. thank you very much to all our listeners that have joined us as part of the Last of the Action Heroes podcast network. We're very excited to be on it, and I've been on it for about a year now. So, I kind of flown by. It feels like I just joined very
recently.
That's
how I found you.
I can imagine. Have you checked out some episodes?
Oh, cool. Definitely. Yeah, I listened to almost everyone.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't know. I love the show.
That's amazing. Oh, great. Oh, well, thank you very much.
In an age when few men played by the rules,
you'll never cheat here again!
One man survived.
Is this seat taken?
It is now.
By making his own.
I promise that I will lose. For at least an hour.
Sounds good to me.
You did say you were going to lose for an hour.
I am a man of my word.
And his name was Maverick.
You always been gutless.
When it came to beating the odds.
Was that fast? I thought that was fast.
No man was better.
How can I possibly go on without my wallet?
Damn.
Oh, don't get mad at me.
Until he met his match.
My name is Annabelle Brance. I'll be taking the stage.
So am I.
This May 20th.
Now, well, I remember my first runaway stage.
Don't worry. Nothing to worry about. I got it all under control.
They're out to win the biggest prize of all.
Welcome to the first ever All Rivers Draw Poker Championship.
From the toughest competition of all, each other. Mel Gibson.
You called me son.
Nothing.
I believe he called you a gutless cow.
No, I did not say that. I was teasing.
Teasing. I don't like being teased.
Jodie Foster.
See, there you go, being all likable again.
James Garner.
A woman's suffering's not a funny thing.
There are exceptions.
At a time when men lived for adventure.
Everybody's got a gun.
One man.
That young dude.
Almost died for it.
Stop playing around and stop those horses.
Again. And again.
Whoa, Ollie, whoa.
And again.
However did you escape from those hostiles? Oh.
Maverick.
My, such splendid similarities.
A Richard Donner film.
Now we'll go on to the stats for today's film. Maverick was released on May 20th, 1994. It was based on the television series of the same name, which ran on ABC for 5 seasons between 1957 and 1962. The film was directed by Richard Donner, who is obviously a legendary director, who directed such hits as Superman, The Omen, Lethal Weapon, The Goonies, and more, including one we covered on the podcast, Assassins. Not necessarily one of his classics, but an interesting film none the same. It was written by William Goldman, an equally legendary screenwriter, who was the screenwriter behind All the President's Men, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kids, and one of my top 10 favorite movies, The Princess Bride. Critically, it is currently sitting on a 68% on Rotten Tomatoes, based on 56 reviews, a 62 on Metacritic, based on 28 reviews. It has a 7.0 out of 10 on IMDb, a 3.4 on Letterboxd, and that's all the critic reviews. Box office wise, it made $183 million off of a $75 million budget, making it the 15th biggest film of 1994, placing it one above the previously covered Sylvester Stallone film, The Specialist, a surprisingly big hit, and one below the Tim Allen family comedy, The Santa Claus. And that's your stats for today.
Have you seen the TV series that it was based on?
I have not, because there is certain old shows that were repeated in the UK, like old westerns, but not like tons, that I remember. I definitely remember The Lone Ranger was repeated. I definitely remember Rawhide was repeated in the UK, like when I was growing up in the 90s, obviously. I don't know about like before then. And there's like a kind of few others, you know. I guess it's not really like a kind of action-y western show, but like, you know, kind of things like Little House on the Prairie. I remember being on in TV and stuff like that. But no, I don't remember this one ever being on UK television. Have you seen the television series, any of the television series?
No, I have not. I was just reading that, you know, there's a few nods to it. Obviously, James Garner. You know, he plays Maverick in the original, as I understand it, but I've not seen it.
He does. And you'd think that'd be like baked in the script that he was going to be part of the film. But I mean, I don't know. There's things on IMDb trivia that they get very wrong and you just never know. It's user generated. But according to the IMDb trivia, the role of Zane Cooper, the James character, James Garner character, was originally going to go to Paul Newman, because Paul Newman was friends with Richard Donner. But basically the studio kind of stiffed him on his salary, or like the salary request, and he was like, no, I'm not doing, you know, I'm doing it, I'll do it for this amount. And they said, we're not giving you that amount. And he said, well, I'm not going to be in the picture.
I saw that as well. And I am a fan of his, so that would have been interesting. But I like the little nod that it's James Garner. I think that adds to the mystique, I guess, of the movie.
Yeah, I like it as well. I like the fact that they kind of decided to tie it into, the film. And this seemed to be like a very kind of popular thing to do in the 90s. There's lots of, I think, I'm not sure what started it. I feel like the Addams Family was like, the Addams Family film seemed to be the start of like these kind of TV to film kind of adaptations, that, and then you just get tons of them in the 90s.
That's one of my favorites. I love the 90s Addams Families.
Yes, I love both those films. In fact, it's one of the few films that I like the sequel more than the original.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's high praise.
I think Addams Family Values is, I like the Addams Family, I think it's 89. But like, yeah, I think the Addams Family Values is even better. Sure. So when would you have first seen this film, Maverick?
Ooh, good question. So 94, I bet I saw it maybe like the year later that year. I did see it in the mid 90s. The reason I know that is because I recall being in high school. So I probably saw it like 96, 97. there was a girl in our class nicknamed Maverick because of something silly that she did at a party, and she never was able to live it down. So that's, unfortunately, I still remember that. People, right. Yep.
Calling her Maverick. But like, how did that come about? Like, did she try and con somebody or something?
No, it was so silly. I don't know if this is a PG or PG-13 rated podcast, but they were playing strip poker.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, when you're in high school,
something silly like that.
So she never lived it down. So they called her Maverick.
Oh,
silliness.
Okay. I see the silliness. No, it's fine. I mean, like, I mark most of the episodes explicit, kind of automatically.
But
there's some movies that I don't actually need to mark the episode explicit because nothing explicit has been said. And there is other movies where we just swear a lot.
Yeah.
I think, like, you know, like I think a particular episode for that, if listeners want to check it out, is basically Craig, my regular co-host, and I just lose our goddamn minds talking about Stop or My Mum Will Shoot, and we are swearing constantly.
I remember that one. Well, I enjoy it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you weren't offended by just the constant swearing.
Not at all.
But I feel like this is definitely a film that probably won't cause as much swearing and frustration, because I don't know about you, but on this rewatch, I found it an enjoyable film. Like, I enjoyed rewatching it.
Same. I for some reason had a very low expectation about it. I'm not certain why, but I was pleasantly surprised. I thought it was really fun. Good rewatch. Lots of antics, you know. It's that kind of a movie where, you know, you don't have to think too much. It's just a lot of hijinks and adventure, and it pokes fun in itself. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. I was curious, like you say, there's lots of antics in the film. What did you think of the opening scene of the movie, where I think the film deliberately tries to trick you into thinking it's another film? Because the opening scene, you get lots of these kind of Leone-esque kind of close-ups, and it's like Randy Newman's score is even a bit kind of Morricone-like, and it's very Good, the Bad and the Ugly, and it's you know, and you think it's going to be because I've seen it before, I know what the movie is, but I think it tries to trick you that this is going to be like a bloodier, more violent Western. And then the narration, the Mel Gibson narration kicks in, and you realize that that's just a goof. Like, that's actually not going to be like that at all.
Mm-hmm. I feel like throughout the movie, I mean, so once you realize it's a comedy and adventure, and since I had seen it before, I knew that, but
yeah.
There are several instances where I find it fun. I mean, it's not hidden too far, but where there's lots of little twists of, they try and make you think one thing and it's another.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of that. I mean, I guess like the movie's all about that in terms of because I mean, it's essentially these three main characters played by Mel Gibson, James Garner, who we mentioned, and Jodie Foster, who we've not got onto yet. And they're all kind of constantly double-crossing each other throughout the course of the film. And that's kind of where the main kind of fun of the film comes about. But I think, like, there's lots of, like, little kind of gags to... kind of filmic gags as well, in the, you know, it particularly when that bank robbery happens, and the bank robber's Danny Glover, and it, you know,
so
and
good. They,
and there's that great joke where Mel Gibson and Danny Glover both look at each other as if they recognize each other, and then kind of go, nah.
And Danny even says, he's uncredited in this, and he even says like the line that he says in Lethal Weapon about, I'm getting too old for this or something like that.
Yeah.
So he even, yeah, repeats his line.
Yeah, yeah, the classic Lethal Weapon line. So, like, before we really get into the meat, the kind of plot of the movie, I was going to talk a little bit about Mel Gibson, who's obviously, throughout the years, has become a very problematic figure, you know, with his arrest in the mid-2000s and the recordings of him, covering all the bases, being sexist, anti-Semitic, homophobic, racist, you know, so like all the, yeah, all of that, you know, which is horrific. But before that, like, what was your relationship to Mel Gibson and his films before the kind of the controversy and people generally going off him?
Yeah, the good question. I mean, he was a pretty bankable star there for a while.
Yeah.
And I feel like he was even maybe people's sexiest man alive. I feel like he was sort of a sex symbol, which I personally don't see it. Like, he's an attractive enough man, but like, there's mm-hmm. nothing super special about him in that way. But I feel like a lot of TV shows would say, oh, Mel Gibson, in terms of him being cute or having a nice butt or something like that. Yeah, I just remember him being in a lot of fun movies, you know, nothing. I don't recall him being in more serious films until later, but yeah, I always enjoyed a Mel Gibson film. He was never a big draw for me. He was never the reason that I went to the movie, but it was just, he was in a lot of, I guess, high grossing movies. And then only later that I'm like, oh, you know, I guess with social media. And yeah, I guess he seems fine. Like in this, even like I was pleasantly surprised that I liked him so much in this movie. So I'm not sure if it's because I know now or what about it? What about you? Were you a fan before?
Yeah, before the controversy and stuff. Yeah, I would definitely say I was a fan. I mean, like, I didn't like extensively go out of my way to see all of his stuff or anything. It wasn't like one of those people that I was like, you know, there were certain action stars that I was like really into that, like, if they had a new movie, I would like definitely, you know, like Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jackie Chan, mm-hmm. Bruce Willis, you know, there's people like that that I was like, oh man, I've got to check this out. You know, but he was definitely kind of in the mix, kind of higher up there of like somebody who I would often check out his movies. And I was, well, I mean, I was a fan of the Lethal Weapon movies, but I'm an even bigger fan of the Mad Max trilogy. I was really into those. So like probably the, you know, Mad Max 2 or the Road Warrior, as it was released in the States, was probably my favorite Mel Gibson film. It was definitely the one I've seen the most. And I realized actually watching this film that like that this one was on television quite a lot, I remember, mm-hmm. in like the late 90s. So I think actually out of all his films other than the Mad Max films, I think this might have been the film I've actually seen the most with Mel Gibson in it. So yeah, no, it was definitely one of those things that I was definitely disappointing when all that stuff came out. And I think I kind of already kind of started to go off him around the time of like the release of The Passion of the Christ.
And
when he started to expose kind of what a kind of religious nutter he was, and I was kind mm-hmm. of like, I'm not really into this anymore. And so that's when I kind of, and then obviously it was a couple of years after that that all the other stuff came out. Rewatching this actually reminded me what a fan I was of him in the 90s, and like how kind of like, because like it's been such a long time that I've like not been a fan of him for like over 20 years or whatever, that is like I was like kind of like, oh wow, I remember I was actually really into Mel Gibson like back in those days. And it's kind of upsetting because like I do think he is really charming in this movie, and I think there's a lot of movies in the 90s that he does that he, you know, he has like a real kind of winning charm about him. And I think that's part of the problem of like of all the kind of stuff that's come out. You know, I don't think that you can, if you're like a James Woods, you can be a piece of shit and still play your stereotypical James Woods character, because James Woods characters are also pieces of shit. But, you know, like, if your whole career is built on your charm, then obviously once stuff like that comes out about you, I mean, it's just, people just don't feel the same way. You know, like, it's no longer charming.
That's a really good way of putting it, because it's like we feel swindled.
Yes.
Because his persona was, yeah, you're right. He, even though I'm not the biggest fan, like, this is a good example of a movie where he's very charming, and he's even quite good looking, and he's good. I mean, he was a great actor. I haven't really seen him in much lately, because he's not a draw for me, as you said, like, over the last however many years. But so I don't know if he was just able to hide his crazy for a while, or if he became crazy over time. I don't know which it is, but
yeah. I think he was able to hide his crazy for a long time, because, like, subsequently, I had read stuff about him, like, you know, like Mad Max, the first Mad Max was like his big break in Australia. And apparently he failed, like, the first audition for that, because, like, he was, like, he looked all kind of beat up because he'd been, like, in a bar fight. But then they auditioned him again and he got the part. I think he's been crazy the whole time. He just kept a lid on it. There was, like, a period from the late 70s to the early 2000s that he managed to hide it from the public. And then it was like, oh, no.
Yeah, or he had handlers or somebody, you know, because he was, like, an A-lister. So, yeah,
sure.
Yeah. For sure.
And, like, we've talked a little bit about, like, Mel Gibson's performance. So the kind of two other main leads in this, as we mentioned, James Garner and Jodie Foster, and I think they're, like, a really, like, together, I think they're, like, a really charming trio, and I think their chemistry works really well. And I think, like, as much as Mel Gibson's, like, the star of the movie, that James Garner and Jodie Foster give like great support and are really equal to Mel Gibson's performance. I was wondering what you thought about that.
I agree. I do really like Jodie Foster. She never comes to mind, though, for some reason, when somebody's inquiring about my favorite actors or actresses. But I feel like everything she does is really solid. And it was kind of nice to see her in more of a fun, lighthearted role, because I feel like a lot of stuff she does is darker. And then James Garner, I am kind of embarrassed to admit that I'm not super familiar with him. So this is, I'm pleasantly surprised, I guess. Like, the trio is great. And I thought James Garner did a fabulous job.
Yeah, I have to say, I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I'm not really super familiar with James Garner's body of work. I do know, like, when I was a kid, The Rockford Files was definitely repeated on television.
Yeah.
So I think I've basically seen this movie and The Rockford Files, some of The Rockford Files, and that is all of the James Garner I've ever seen.
Yeah, I've actually never seen The Rockford Files, but it's repeated here. It's just one of those that, for some reason, like MASH, like, I've actually never seen an episode, despite its being on a lot.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Like, it was just one of those things that was, for me, it was just one of those things that was on the telly, like, in the sense of, like, my mom always liked kind of mystery shows, so we always watched, you know, like, all the kind of, watch Magnum PI, we watch Murder, She Wrote, you know, we watch, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Love,
you
know, it. Like, I dig them too. I probably would like the show. I should maybe check it out.
Yeah.
Did you see, for Jodie Foster's character, Annabelle, they had originally wanted, I had read that they had originally wanted Meg Ryan.
Yes, I did know this. Yes, I did see that.
Yeah. A few others, like, who else did they consider? Like Julia Roberts and Michelle Pfeiffer, which I guess I can sort of see any of those women playing this role, but I did like Jodie Foster in it very much.
I do. Yeah, I did like Jodie Foster. Yeah, and I think, yeah, all of those actresses play it a bit different. I'm not sure. I think, like, Jodie Foster is maybe the best fit. Out of those actresses, I think that she's maybe the best fit. In terms of the, you know, kind of fitting the role to an actress, I think out of the other choices, my pick would probably be Michelle Pfeiffer out of those, because I think she's the...
prettiest?
Yeah, I think she's got the kind of... Yeah, she's got that kind of... I think she'd be more convincing as a con artist than either Julia Roberts and Meg Ryan. I think Meg Ryan might play it too comedically, and I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm just not sure. I just don't see Julia Roberts in the role at all, to be honest.
I can see that. I love Julia, so I can see her in almost anything. But yeah, I can see there's something about Michelle Pfeiffer that, yeah, more con artisty. I can see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She has like a kind of, she's just one of those actresses that kind of always has like a kind of cheeky glint in her eye. There's mischief nearby. You know, like I feel like that's why I see Michelle Pfeiffer of those ones the most.
I also want to comment on how much I love the phrase that people from the UK use, cheeky. We don't use that here and I love it. We should.
Oh,
I really like it.
Is cheeky just not a thing?
There's a few others, like brilliant. We don't say, I feel like there's a few other like words or phrases that when I hear it, I'm like, I love that. But I don't know why it hasn't picked up steam here.
Oh, fair enough. I mean, there's certain things, because that's really interesting to me because like, I would just assume that those sorts of phrases would be kind of universal in English-speaking countries. I know like there's lots of differences. Like this, for example, there's certain things that I know that only Scottish people say, like because because we have like our own kind of, we have Scots, which is kind of there is debate amongst linguists whether it's like an actual language or if it's just like a dialect. So we have like specific Scots words. So instead of saying, for example, brilliant, you know, for something that's really good, we would say that's braw. It's just braw, braw, which means really good. For example.
Okay. I am like fascinated massively by this kind of thing, regional differences in dialects and accents and stuff. So that's, I pick up on, I very much notice it.
Yeah. And if you were ever in Edinburgh, you might notice that people say Ken a lot, which is not, we're not using it as a name. So we're using it as like, do you know? So for example, if somebody says, Ken, what I mean like, it means, do you know what I mean?
Like K-E-N?
Like K-E-N, yes, Ken. So like that is in like, particularly in Edinburgh, it's because there's regional differences within Scotland as well. There's lots of, everybody has their own Scottish words that are just part of the country. So Ken's a more Edinburgh East Coast thing. But that's what it means. So if somebody says you can, it means do you know?
Interesting. I love it.
Yeah. So but I try to restrict my Scottish words. Because I live in New Zealand, people don't understand what I'm talking about.
But I'm sure you've picked up New Zealand-y things as well.
Yeah, I guess so. They say all good quite a lot. And like, it's just their way of saying kind of like, everything is okay. You know, if it's like, is that okay? And it's like, all good, mate, all good. That's
we say all good, but we're not cool. We don't say mate. I love mate. I love that. G'day, mate. No, I you don't want me to, but no, I yeah, we say all good here as well.
Well. They tend to say sweet ass a lot as well. It's just that's really good. Sweet ass. Yeah. Which is just sweet AS, not sweet. ASS.
I like either. Yeah.
So yeah, no, I'm fascinated as well because all the kind of all the kind of English is such a fascinating language because it's spoken in so many countries and it's spoken completely differently in all those countries.
Indeed.
There's no real good segue back to Maverick from our linguistic discussion, so I'm just going to clunkily come back to the film.
That was actually pretty good.
I'm working on my transitions, working on them. So I think we spoke about like the kind of three central characters in the film. There's a lot of we spoke about the Danny Glover cameo. There's a lot of good kind of the supporting cast as well. There's a lot of good James Coburn's in the film. Alfred Molina is a kind of bad guy. I think he's supposed to be Mexican, despite the fact he's Alfred Molina.
They say the Spaniard. They call him the Spaniard.
The Spaniard. Yes, that's right. They do call him the Spaniard. The character's name is Angel, but yes, they do. Mm-hmm. They do call him the Spaniard. So maybe he comes from Spain.
Mm-hmm, I would imagine so.
That's fair enough. It's a very Hollywood thing to do in the 90s. It's like, we've got an ethnic character. Mm-hmm. I'll just find a random British person who looks vaguely ethnic and then cast him. But can't we just cast that? No, it has to be a British person for some reason.
That is absolutely a thing in the 90s. 80s too. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very, very common thing. It's a very... it's one of those things. I'm glad we've moved on from that. I'm glad that there's better representation there. Mm-hmm. That we're just not the. I mean, I'm sure there's a number of UK actors who are a bit annoyed by it, but I think overall, it's a better for the world.
Mm-hmm. We have Graham Greene playing
that is true.
Joseph.
That is true. Yeah. And I think, again, talking about common 90s thing, if you did have a Western in the 90s and you had a Native American character, there's about a 90% chance that that character is played by Graham Greene.
He's in everything. Yep. He sure is. I was going to give credit to the movie and Mel Gibson because he actually pokes fun at the fact that, he's like, I try, jokingly, I try and kill one Indian a day. That's what they get for them being here before we claimed the land or something. Like, he's basically pointing out that we were in the wrong, at we as in the white man, so to speak. I have to give the movie credit for that. A lot of times they didn't do that.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. I am glad you pointed that out because I think the film navigates that really quite well in that, because you're looking back at these films, they're 30 years old. Often they have kind of clunky, kind of problematic areas to them. And particularly once the kind of Native American tribe first kind of rocks up and you're kind of they kind of look like cartoon stereotypes of Native Americans. But then the flip of that is, they've deliberately done that because they're getting money from this rich Russian guy. So they've dressed up in a very stereotypical, what the kind of cartoon kind of Native American way. And the guy is, speaking Tonto and stuff like that deliberately. So it's all part of the gag. So I was like, oh, that's actually a really clever move. And I really have to applaud the movie for dancing around what could have been problematic for sure.
Agreed. And Mel Gibson's character, I mean, again, there's always a scheme or a plot, which is great.
Yeah.
And so he's speaking to Joseph in whatever their native language is. I don't know what tribe they were.
I don't think it's mentioned in the movie at all. So I'm not
really sure. And so he's, so they know each other and he's saying, let's put this con on, pretend you're pointing at her and, put on this show. And it's a con.
Yeah.
So they're partners in the con, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I guess, like, we should probably mention before that, like, there is a kind of leading up to, like, one of those moments where you think, oh, is this where I'm going to wince in the movie? We meet some kind of people who are fundraising for a missionary church, and they have been attacked by, they think, you know, Native Americans, or Indians, as they call them in the film, which, you know, again, I guess at the time. But it turns out that's not the case. It is just like some white people who have put on Native American makeup. And like, so that whole section in the movie that could be kind of tricky or kind of make you wince is actually just a really fun section in the movie. And Graham Greene's always great, isn't he? Graham Greene's always fun.
I'm trying to think what everyone, like, if somebody, let me look up what his, like, most famous roles are. So he was nominated for an Oscar.
I think Dances with Wolves is kind of when he became famous.
Yep. Wind River, The Green Mile. But yeah, you're right. Dances with Wolves is probably what people know him. The reason I'm saying that is because I have a feeling a lot of people know him, but they don't know his name. So yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes, you're absolutely correct. Yeah, I guess it's one of those things. If you're if you're a dedicated movie nerd, you probably know the name Graham Greene. But I think for a lot of people, they'll know the face better than the name. But yes, he Dances with Wolves, I think, is his most famous film, and but he is in just tons of things. We actually covered a film which is kind of lesser known, which is a Val Kilmer film called Thunderheart, and it's actually a really good film, and Graham Greene's really great in it, and he's kind of pretty much the second lead after Val Kilmer, and it's a pretty cool film, and so if people have not checked that out or have not listened to that episode, check that out. I would recommend checking that film out because he's really great in that.
Indeed.
Yeah. So, I also think that, like, again, I actually don't know the name of the guy who plays the Russian Archduke, but he is also a familiar face. Like, I'm sure I've seen him play similarly brutish characters in things before. But I didn't, like, I probably should have double checked the name just before we came on the record.
Well, I have IMDb up. It is Paul L. Smith. And you're right, he is a familiar face. Red Sonja.
Ah.
He was in Dune. Let's see, what are some of these others? Yeah, those look to be some of his biggest ones. He was also, he played Bluto in the Popeye movie from 1980.
Has
anybody
yes.
seen that?
I remember that. Particularly as a kid, I was a huge Robin Williams fan, and and that was one of those movies that I saw when I was a kid and really enjoyed. And then many years later, I read about what a flop it was and how it was poorly received. And yeah, no, I'm still a Popeye defender.
But yeah, he is a familiar face for sure.
Yeah, right. That is probably what I most know him from. Actually, the Bluto
Popeye movie.
In the Popeye movie. So yes, and he always kind of plays characters like that. So he's a lot of fun, and I'm trying to think of like the other notable cast member. I guess like James Coburn's like the other most notable.
He's great.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed him in this. He just plays that type of character very well, like the Commodore, which I don't really know what that is, but they keep calling him the Commodore. Is it some sort of a military thing?
I think so. I believe so. I'm not super knowledgeable about military stuff, but I believe it's some sort of rank.
And he owns his character owns the big game at the end that they play is this big tournament, poker tournament. And it's played on one of those Mississippi River like steamboats that are kind of iconic, and he owns the boat, and it's his part or his poker party, his poker game that people join in.
So yes, you mentioned that kind of Mississippi kind of riverboat. I guess this would be a good idea. Sometimes I forget because like we've kind of changed the format of the show. Before it used to be the format of the show was we went through the plot kind of chronologically. So there was no need for a plot synopsis. But now we don't really do that. So there is a need for a plot synopsis that sometimes I forget to give. So mentioning this book, it's probably a good time, like, I don't know, like 45 minutes into the episode to tell people what our plot is. The plot is very basic. Basically, Maverick needs $25,000 to enter a poker tournament. Then we meet Jodie Foster's character, Annabelle, and James Garner's character, Marshall Zane Cooper. And they all try to con each other. And it's basically Maverick keeps losing money, then winning money, then losing money. And it's all about, can he make it to the big tournament? Of course he can. That's obviously. But, you know, like that's the whole suspense of the film. Can he make it there? And then our finale is on the boat when we're at the poker tournament. And then the thing is, can Maverick prove that he is the greatest poker player in this area in the west of America, whatever, and then yes, which we'll talk about more in a minute. But that's basically the whole plot in a nutshell.
Good synopsis, and I think it's my fault. Apologies, I have a tendency to get us off track because I'm a little bit scatterbrained. So
no, that's okay. That's probably we don't mind. We don't mind tangents here. I'm sure they'll like. although you've got a couple of firsts. You know, like obviously this is our first Mel Gibson film that we covered. This is also the first time we've ever gone on a linguistics tangent. That's definitely. That's definitely a pod first.
I'm kind of surprised actually about that.
Yeah, no, it's never come up before. You know, it's something that I enjoy. I also, like I said, I enjoy you know, the kind of regional differences and stuff. But it's just something we've gone lots of other tangents, lots of other weird tangents. Mm-hmm.
Which is
also
fun.
Also, I'm ashamed to say you're also our first female guest, which is an honor for you. But like, it's like
now no.
we should have done this sooner. I found more when I was doing the horror podcast. I found more female guests to collaborate with than with the action podcast. But we will ensure to bring more female perspective on the pod.
That I was surprised by the horror, more females liking horror. But then again, action tends not to be big for women either. But I gotta say, well, first of all, I'm honored to be the first female on, but also everyone that I know in podcasting seems to be a man. Even on my show, I've only had like a handful of women on.
Yeah. I don't know. I think women are definitely into horror more than, well, based on my podcast experience, women are definitely into horror more than they are action, because I've looked at the statistics for New Horror Express, and the audience is almost 50-50, male, female. Whereas the podcast, in terms of the statistics, the podcast audience for this show is like 80-20 male.
Okay.
It might even be slightly more than that. Yeah.
I can see that. I did actually, to your point about Mel Gibson's character Maverick needing $25,000 for the entrance fee to the big game.
Yeah.
This is in the 1800s. What did you think about these? So he's 3K short of, like, he keeps, like you said, he keeps losing, winning and losing money, but he has like 22 grand and he needs another 3K to make up the 25,000. Mm-hmm. And then the purse or the prize for the winner is $500,000.
Yeah.
What did you think about that? I actually looked up how much that would be in today's money. It's
That does seem like a lot of money. What would it be like? Would it be like 250,000 to enter the tournament or something? Or like
it looked. And this isn't exact because the like inflation calculator I was using only went back to the early like 1926. So I'm like estimating.
Yeah.
But the 3K would be about $100,000 today. So he's like, oh, I just need, and they're very casual with it. It seems like. And then the entrance fee would be $1 million.
$1 million, yeah, right.
And then the winnings would be like 20 million. But I just thought specifically him winning and losing the $3,000, that'd be like $100,000 today.
Wow. Yeah. Because I did think about that. I didn't quite realize it was quite that much. I certainly thought like 25,000 might be 250,000 or even 500,000, something like that. No, not necessarily a million, but still, I did think it'd be like a shit ton of money. You're right. I think because like this movie's focus is elsewhere. It's like, you know, the movie's focus is mainly on like the gags, like, you know, and the stunts and, you know, that kind of stuff. That, like, the whole suspense about him like winning, losing the money, and, you know, isn't like there's not like a super amount of tension there. It's quite casually played. And it should be like when the moments where he like loses a bunch of money should be more kind of like traumatizing than they actually are. If this was like I guess it's not a very serious movie, so I guess it's like that's they're true. Just playing it kind of fast and loose. Mm-hmm. But you're definitely right, it should be like a way bigger deal each time the money goes missing, or, you know, Annabelle steals some of the money or whatever, you know, like for sure. That's crazy though, like $1 million to get in. Wow.
Yeah. And there was one other person, one of the other poker players, that I wanted to point out who would be a familiar face. His name is Dan Hedaya. He doesn't play a big part, but he's one of the poker players. And the reason that I noticed him is because he, talking about the Adams family, he plays the Adams's lawyer.
That's right.
Guy.
Yeah, that's right.
Did you recognize him?
Yes, I did. Because Dan Hedaya is one of those actors. Like, I don't know what people would most know him from. Maybe the Addams Family. I think like the Addams Family is definitely one of his most famous roles. Also, like, I think a lot of people forget, but he's like initially the main villain in Commando. Even though that Bennett, the kind of who's originally kind of his henchman before he kind of bumps him off, is kind of the more kind of famous one people remember. But Dan Hedaya, for people who are not aware, those probably his most famous roles. And if you don't recognize the name, you will definitely recognize Dan Hedaya's face because he's been in everything. And mm-hmm. like, particularly, you will recognize Dan Hedaya's eyebrows, which are
good call on that. So
I did, because it was one of those things, because I think like Dan Hedaya is like a really good character actor, and anytime I've seen him, I've really enjoyed his performances. So I was kind of surprised that he was such a throwaway character. I mean, I think he gets like one line, and that's it. And I was like, oh, they've like hired Dan Hedaya just to sit at the poker table and then like not do much, and then he's gone from the film.
That's a good point. There were several, because there's really only three main people that we see a lot, and yep. then maybe a couple of others that we see a little bit. And then, you know, we already talked about Danny Glover's
cameo
that's uncredited, but there's several others, like kind of famous people that were in this. Like the couple at the end, there's like a famous, is it Waylon Jennings?
Yes, it's Waylon Jennings. So while I'm a big music fan, I'm mainly into kind of rock and metal. So like my knowledge of country is quite poor. But I am certainly aware, having looked this up, I am certainly aware there's a bunch of cameos. Waylon Jennings is a name I've heard. Apparently one of the other people who gets thrown off the boat is a guy called Clint Black, who was apparently a popular country star in the 90s. Yeah. And there's a number of other popular country stars from the 90s that are in the movie. And like the end credit song is like Amazing Grace, which I think like that song has like every popular country star of the 90s singing it, from what I could see from the I think like there's a lot of cameos that I think probably went over my head, because there's cameos from country stars and there's also a lot of cameos from people who starred in old Western shows.
I did read Reba McEntire was also in this talking about another country star, but you're, because I'm not a big Western person or a country music person, they probably were wasted on me. But I just thought of that when you were saying that they didn't do much with Dan. Is it Hedaya? I was pronouncing it incorrectly.
I'm not sure, actually. I don't want to pretend to be the expert on it. It's either Hedaya or Hedaya. I'm not entirely sure. I have to say. So yes, if anybody does know, comment. You can always comment on these episodes. Get in touch, on Twitter or something, and be like, it's Hedaya or it's Hedaya, whatever it is. We like the actor. He's a great actor.
Yeah, we do.
That's all we're saying.
You talking about Clint Black's character getting thrown over. So listeners, if you haven't seen the movie or if it's been a minute, the cheaters of the poker game, their punishment is that they get thrown off this boat. What were your thoughts about that?
Well, so it's one of those things that I guess it depends how seriously you take the movie. Because, if this was a slightly more serious movie, I'd probably be like, oh my God. I'd probably be like, how close are they to shore? Is it an easy swim? How cold is this water? How far is that jump? If you're hitting water from a great height, it can be like hitting a brick wall, there'd be a, and I think if it had a more serious tone, I think like I probably have these kind of considerations in my mind. Actually watching the movie, because it's such a jaunty film, I was just like, that's funny.
it is. You're right about that. That's a really good point. The movie, same thing with their casual nature about losing like $1 million.
Yeah.
It is super funny, and it happens several times. And even the one guy is like, oh, I'll just jump because I don't want to lose my hat. And he like holds his hat on.
Yeah.
But my brain gets bogged down with logistical stuff a lot. And so I'm like, so are they just dying? Like, what are we led to believe happens? Yeah.
Yeah. This is the thing, because of the fun nature of the film, I assume that they live. It's one of those things that in a film like this, I always assume the best. It's a bit like the James Bond thing. I don't know how many James Bond films you've watched, but basically good people or people who are assumed to be innocent don't die. So a police car could be run over by a tank, and then you would get a cutaway shot to both police officers going like, oh my God.
just dusting themselves off. Yeah.
You know? So in this kind of cartoonish realm, I always assume the best, that they just swam to shore, they're fine. Yeah. Everything worked out good.
We'll go with that. I think you're right, for sure. But it was, for some reason, my brain watching it now versus in 1994. And it is a very silly movie and very enjoyable. Sometimes an overly silly movie like that, I kind of roll my eyes and I'm like, eh. But I thought that I very much rolled with it. and it was fun.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think that they're... I think that not necessarily... I think maybe it gets the balance right, that not necessarily everything is silly, like in the sense of most things are silly, but like you're kind of... The film kind of clearly tells you kind of what to take seriously and what not to take seriously. So like we're taking relatively seriously like the kind of central kind of relationships of the characters, the central trio, and we're supposed to invest in that. And I wasn't massively into the romance between Annabelle and Brett, but like it's played well enough that you're still kind of invested in it. And I think like you're kind of told what to invest in and what to just be like, well, this is nonsense. So I'm just going to enjoy the nonsense. I think like it does, you know, Richard Donner's kind of direction does quite a good job at that. And I think like he's throughout his career, I think he was good at that, you know, a lot of his films are quite over the top, quite silly, you know, The Goonies, True. Lethal Weapon, Superman, this film, but there's certain character beats and things that you're kind of supposed to take with a little bit more seriously than the rest of the film, and I think he does like a good balancing job, and it was something he was quite good at throughout his career.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
So I think it's maybe a good time to kind of we kind of talk kind of roughly through the film, but like, what were some of your kind of highlights, kind of favorite scenes, kind of best moments that kind of really stood out for you in the movie?
Trying to think what I very much enjoyed, the final poker game where we kind of see, I guess, where we're sort of like, well, who's, I guess, basically the latter half of the movie, or the latter third of the movie, where it's down to just like three people in the poker game. Alfred Molina, Angel, and the Commodore, and Maverick, and the dealer. So there's a dealer, and we see him cheating. And at first I thought he was cheating for the Commodore, but then it looks like he's dealing from the bottom of the deck for Angel. And so then I like that Maverick catches all of this. And so he catches them doing that, but he still wins. And that there's a callback. I like it because that there's a callback to him. There's several callbacks. So there's he keeps talking about stories that his pappy, my old pappy, used to tell me this, that, or the other.
Yeah.
Which there's a payoff. And one of those is that he wills the card to be what he wants it to be via magic, and it actually works. This is the only time that it works, and it works, so he wins. And then I love all of the, there's like maybe four different double crosses that we see all in very quick succession from there, like the money getting stolen. And then you see, the Commodore and Cooper are in on it. Oh, but then here comes Maverick to save the day, and we see that they're in on it. And then you see that he purposefully kind of makes it so Annabelle can come steal half of the money, but not all of the money. I just like all of the quick succession at the latter portion of the movie. And that last scene is my favorite scene. That we learn, spoiler alert, that Cooper's his dad.
Yeah.
And that they've been in on this together the whole time. And they don't lose all their money. They still have half of the money, and they're in the tub together. And Annabelle, they're not in a tub together. They're in a bathhouse, two separate tubs, but they're in the same room.
Yeah.
Annabelle comes to steal the money. And he, you know, it's no big thing because he likes her. They like each other. And he's like, oh, it'll be fun to try and, you know, hunt that money back down. And she knew the whole time that they were father and son as well, and just the cute little jokes that she makes about that. What about you?
Yeah, no, that was, that whole final sequence, really good, really good. And I do think that that's the perfect them both sitting in the two bathtubs, smoking cigars and just kind of laughing about the whole thing. I think like that's really charmingly played. I think it's a really fun scene. I think it's a great capper to the movie. Mm-hmm. I do think actually kind of talking about that final sequence, kind of rewinding a little bit. Was there any moment where you believed the Commodore was not the villain? Because like the Commodore is set up to be the main villain, and then Marshall Cooper, Zane Cooper, James Garner's character steals the money, and we're supposed to be fooled into thinking, oh, James Coburn's not the villain, or he's been duped as well. Did you buy into that? Because I was always kind of like, nah, there's got to be another twist. James Coburn's definitely the villain. They've spent a lot of time setting him up as the villain, so he's got to be.
Well, you know, the way that I watched this, there were some scenes that kept skipping because I actually got the DVD from the library and it was scratched a little bit. So I think there was like one scene that I was missing, uh-huh. which is he the guy who is trying to pay Angel to prevent Maverick from getting to the big game?
We believe so. It's never actually fully confirmed. We never actually see a scene of him like him paying him off or anything like that. But it's just we're made to assume that. We're kind of led to believe that. For sure.
I was just going with it. I thought it was a twist because I thought that perhaps that was the. I did not foresee there was an extra twist in the middle that I didn't see. So I thought that the twist was, oh, Maverick and his dad, that we didn't yet know, that they're in on this together, that Cooper was going to steal the money and then go share it with Maverick. But there's an extra little twist in between that that I didn't see coming.
Right. Yeah. That Cooper had like made this deal with the Commodore. Mm-hmm. Yeah. For sure.
But so you didn't buy it at all. It sounds like you knew that the Commodore was.
I mean, like, yeah. I think like even if I hadn't seen the movie before, I think like the way James Coburn plays the character, it has like a kind of sleazy villain vibe.
Yeah.
So like I was just like, nah, there's got to be more to it. You know, like I mean, it has been a long time, but like, you know, I have seen the film before. But I think I would have kind of been suspicious or been like, nah, there's got to be more. Although I had totally forgot that like the final twist that like James Garner's character is the father. Of mm-hmm. You know, like and I love how that's revealed. I think it's a very funny line of like James Garner like always complaining that he's like, you always misquote me, you know, I never said that, you know, like and then he kind of shoots back with like, well, I had to embellish, you know, your phrases were like boring or like, you know, I'm kind of paraphrasing now, but like so I thought that was a very fun reveal, and like I had totally forgot that, so like so that twist definitely got me.
Yeah, I didn't remember that either. Yeah, I was just going with all of the twists and turns. And I thought all the little ways that Annabelle steals from Maverick were cute. I really thought I liked that he thinks. So there's a scene where where Maverick is talking with Joseph. And he's like, oh, you mean you already have $22,000? Can I see it? Can I see it? And he's like, yeah, here, you know. And Joseph tricks him into thinking that the money was stolen. There's news. Yeah. It's just newspaper. So Maverick thinks that Annabelle got him again. But she didn't.
No.
Like that time, that was just Joseph playing a trick on him.
Just fucking with him.
So there was a lot of little twists and turns that, and I will say that again, because my brain works the way my brain works, it gives me anxiety, mm-hmm. like, you know, like if I'm one of these people, like, you can never relax. You have to be so on your toes all the time, even though it's just a silly comedy. But movies where there's lots of twists and double crosses. Yeah, I'm just like, oh, my brain, that's just too much anxiety for me.
Maybe yeah, no, I can imagine. I think like two scenes that I wanted to mention that stand out, I think, is one, has one because it's just insane, and the other because it does have a really fun twist payoff, is the first one I was going to talk about was the fake fight. So Maverick's character early in the film, these guys, Angel, it looks like, is just about to beat him up. And just before he beats him up, the like six other guys come into the bar where they're playing poker and threaten Maverick. And then they take it outside and Maverick puts up his fist, kind of early, late 1800s boxing style. And then he fights off these six guys. And it's like, it's a really... it's a kind of a comical fight, it's a lot of getting people to hit themselves and people running into each other, and it's done very much in I very much enjoy comedy fights, I guess because I'm a big Jackie Chan fan. I very much enjoy comedy fights, but then we get this even more fun payoff that the fight was staged. It was a completely staged fight, and he had paid these people to make him look like a badass. Which I thought was really, really fun. Like, what did you think of that sequence?
Yes, agreed. That was really fun. But then again, it's like he double crosses them because he cheats them out of the money that he's paying them. It's not like the $100 bill.
Yeah.
What was the deal with it? It wasn't a real $100 bill.
It wasn't legit or something. Yeah.
So, because he gets change from them. So anyway, so everybody wants a piece of him. But all of those little sequences add up in my head, like, oh, well, I do get bogged down with logistics, even though it's silly, like the planning involved without being able to text them.
Because even I'm not so like, particularly in a film like this, I guess I accept films as they are. Like, if a film's silly, I accept that they're silly. And if a film tries to be serious, then I get more into the kind of minutiae and like, how does this logistically work? And why would this character do this and stuff like that? So like, I think I probably take films as seriously as they take themselves. And that, like, and if a film takes itself too seriously, then I get more upset about things.
To clarify it, same, it's just like I have to remind myself, Katie, just go with it, like, who cares?
I get it, and I'm always intrigued into how much people do that, and how much people, because I know some people who are like, well, it's just a movie, just forget about it. And I know people are like really the other way and are like, well, yeah, but like, if this was real world, like, it's just very interesting to me, the kind of lens that we all, the different lens that we all look at movies. You bring up a good point, because even I kind of thought that, of being like, how did they time it so correctly? Were they just waiting outside the bar the whole time? Was there like a hand signal that Maverick gave that we don't see, right, like off camera? Like, what is the deal with that? So even I was kind of like, I'm not sure how this all logistically works. But it was fun all the same.
Well, and that same scene earlier in the scene, he wants to join the table, and the table is like, no, we're good. We have enough players. And he says, I promise, or something like, I promise I'll lose for an hour. So he sets his watch for an hour. So he's losing money for an hour and just knows he's a good enough poker player to make it up. And I liked that later, when he does win all the money, they're all upset. And he said, no, I lost for an hour. And in that hour, I was learning all of your tells. You do this when you're bluffing, and you do this. And so that, like, that's how he works the table, so to speak. I liked that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was, and I think like that, that whole thing, that whole sequence actually at the table, I think, like, establishes his character really well. In like, we learn that he's like, he's really sharp. He's a really good poker player. He's really observant in terms of people's tells. The film kind of tries to present him as a coward, which kind of sort of works, but sort of doesn't, because like, there's lots of times where we see him like do stuff that's like not cowardly, but like the film is always trying to present him in this kind of very cowardly light, which it's half convincing, because yes, he staged the fight, and yes, he did other things that are like that are not quote unquote brave, but then he does lots of other things where he puts his life in peril, which are clearly is very brave. So like, mm-hmm. I'm not really convinced by the film convincing us that he's like this cowardly guy who always runs away from anything.
Yeah, or even that he's just kind of like a fumbling kind of a guy. And same with Annabelle a little bit. But yeah, we do see him later like pretend to be the Indian that Russian Duke pays to kill. I really liked, speaking of other scenes, I loved that he knows that about that Duke, and then he takes advantage of that. The way that his brain is just constantly scheming, he's like, I can make $6,000 like that by pretending to be with Indian Affairs, he says. He has like a badge or something, and basically bribes him into giving him $6,000 because he's bragging about killing a Native American person, like a human being. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard. Yeah. For sure. And he knows that. That's also, like you say, that's a really good scene. I do think that we cannot end the episode without talking about the really quite insane stunt that they do with the runaway carriage. So like the stagecoach, they're on a stagecoach. They kind of set it up that Maverick tries to help this elderly guy onto the stagecoach, and the guy's like, no, I'm like the driver, why does everybody assume, like, you know, and he's coughing and he's clearly on his last legs. So they set up quite well, and then, as you would predict, the driver dies, and then basically Maverick has to get the stagecoach under control. And the way he does this is he has to go like under the carriage, and then he gets flipped on top of it, and then he has to jump on the horses, and then he has to pull the horses back, and then it's like near a cliff top, and obviously I watched like a little making of on YouTube that you can see on YouTube, and obviously you can kind of see how they do it, and you know, obviously there's safety things, but you know, like Mel Gibson did his own stunt there, or part of it at least. And it's really quite a stunt. So I think it's quite impressive, and it's one of the few moments that is taken mainly seriously. There is gags within it, you know, because mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. Marshall Cooper pretends that the stagecoach has like a squeaky wheel, and is like, you know, so he can't do anything because he has to protect this wheel, and there's nothing wrong with the wheel. So there is jokes within it, but it's taken relatively seriously, and it's actually quite a suspenseful, tense scene.
Because there are six horses, which I thought was a little, I don't know. I was surprised there were six horses on this carriage.
Yes.
And they stopped short, I mean, maybe a foot short of the cliff's edge, and throws Maverick over. So he's like hanging off the ledge. The other thing, I was like, why doesn't he just take the reins?
Yes, to I wasn't stop sure. The horses? I wasn't sure about that either. I was like, because when he gets on top of the stagecoach, I was like, well, the obvious thing to do is to take the stagecoach driver position and then just like rein the horses in.
Right.
So like, I don't know why there was like, I don't know why there would be need to kind of jump on the horses to stop them going, or, you know, like, maybe the reins have fallen over, or I don't know. Like, I'm not sure what happened there, because I was also confused by that. I was like, I guess it looks more impressive, but I was
It does. Like, that's probably why. He hops from, like, because there's three rows of two horses, so he hops from one to the other, and I mean, just the momentum of all of the, I don't know. I was like, that, I don't buy that. Just use the reins. But that's one I think we're maybe supposed to be frustrated by it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is pretty intense. I would not want to be part of that stunt.
No, I definitely don't have stunt person DNA. You know, the people who do stunts, they are the opposite of me. I'm an anxious, nervous man, and generally want to stay far, far away from anything like that. You know, I'm much more of a watcher than a doer. So,
same.
But no, I admire these people, these crazy, crazy people who will do these things. It's very impressive, but very tense to watch. But it worked. It was a great scene.
There was another fun stunt, not quite as impressive as that, but someone tries to lock him in his room so that he cannot make the 5 a.m. table time. And so he has to somehow go out the window and use a rope and kind of swing around, and he makes it just in the nick of time.
Yes, indeed, that was a pretty good stunt as well. I think, like, because it's given that kind of bit extra threat, because there's all these kind of fire lamps that they're on as well, so it looks kind of impressive and quite cool as well, because he's like swinging through this near this fire. So yeah, I think, like, that's I think like the stagecoach is the big stunt in the movie, but like I think, like, that's kind of the next best stunt in the film. So I think overall, I think we've pretty much covered the movie Maverick. So I think it might be time now for some final thoughts. Any final thoughts you have on the film, and also whether you would give this a recommend to our listeners.
I definitely would give it a recommend. My final thoughts are that I went into this with low expectations, and it vastly surpassed them. It was really fun. It is very silly. If you like an adventure comedy, especially one that is set in the Old West, and you like poker, like things like that, even if you don't, it's just really fun. I'm not even a big Mel Gibson fan at all, but he was really good in this. And there's a lot of other fun characters that pop up. It's something just to have on in the background. You don't have to pay attention too closely. So yeah, I definitely would recommend this. It is a good movie.
And I would absolutely agree with you. I wasn't sure about this movie. I had seen it a few times in the 90s. I remember enjoying it, but I was like, I didn't remember it being amazing, but I remember it being like a fun little movie. And I think I enjoyed it even more than I thought I was going to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. Because it's one of those things, I've probably not seen it in like nearly 25 years probably. And you know, so you just never know. It's like, oh well, I quite liked it when I was, you know, 13, 14. You know, I'm 38 now. You know, how am I going to like it now? I might be a bit disappointed. It might not live up to my memory. But actually, I think actually almost exceeded my memory, to be honest. So I think this is a really fun film. I think all the performers are really on their top game. I think the stunt gags work. I think the comic gags work. There's great. All the actors have like kind of great comic timing, and everything's done really well. It looks really beautiful. The cinematographer on the film was Vilmos Zsigmond, who's a very famous cinematographer, done stuff like The Deer Hunter, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, right. A bunch of other stuff. So it looks amazing.
It does.
And I think something we didn't mention as well, actually, that really fits the kind of comic tone of the movie is it's got a really quirky, fun score by Randy Newman, which really adds to that kind of a fun, jaunty atmosphere of the movie. So yeah, I think this is really a great fun time, and I would highly recommend it to any of our listeners who have not checked out or have just not checked out since the 90s. Yeah.
Well said.
So that wraps up Maverick. And so it just leaves us to do the kind of plugs. So if you want to plug away all your social medias, all your shows, kind of advertise away.
Well, check out Retromade and wherever you find your podcasts, your Pop Culture Rewind. I'm also on YouTube. So check out the Retromade Podcast YouTube channel. And I'm primarily do a Facebook page for social media for that show. And then One More Round is also on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. So check me out.
Excellent. So we highly recommend people do that. It's a very fun time. Hopefully you already know where this show is, but if you are a first-time listener, you can get us wherever podcasts are provided. You can also check us out on the Last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network. And if you want to hit us up on social media, we've got a Facebook page, we've got a Twitter/X page, which is at 90s Action. If that falls into the sea, we're looking at maybe getting like a Blue Sky or one of those other ones that people seem to be migrating to because Elon Musk is destroying everything in his path. Mm-hmm. That is all for this time. So it just leaves me to say thank you very much for listening. And please do join us next time when we will be talking about Highlander 3, The Sorcerer, or The Final Conflict, or one of the many other names that Highlander 3 apparently has. Anyway, join us for another fun time then. Until then, though, see ya.